listen, if you grew up in the era of watching Kobe, you idolized him. I don't care, you know, who you were. You know, he had a massive impact on your game and on your life. So, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's tough to, I've been pretty long-winded, but yesterday I had no words. But, you know, I think he impacted all of us, from a micro level, but for me in a very, very big way.
Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here on today's show. Evan and I are going to talk about Cavs Pistons. And then at the end of the show, Jake Madison from Locked On Pelicans joins me to talk about tomorrow's Cavs Pelicans game, which will not only be the Zion Williamson show coming to Cleveland, but also I think the Cavs are going to have, I don't know exactly what yet, but there is going to be something planned to honor the late Kobe Bryant. As you heard on the way in, there's Kevin Love talking about Kobe Bryant, and then you'll hear Larry Nance, who played with Kobe. It was on, which is, and played with Kobe in his last year with the Lakers, and developed something of a relationship with him. You'll hear what he had to say about Kobe texting him after Game 1 of the 2018 Finals, aka that J.R. Smith, George Hill, LeBron punches a whiteboard game that you all remember very fondly. But this is Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Evan, this Cavs Pistons game was very fun. 115-100 win. KPJ's back. Sexton looked good. Love was a absolute dynamite 3-point shooter. McKinney was, I thought, fantastic off the bench. What to you stood out from this one?
Well, Chris, I just flubbed my own joke. In honor of the Bachelor being in Cleveland tonight, I'd like to give out 4 roses of my own to the Cavaliers.
Oh my goodness, this is dynamite content.
2 for the starters, 2 for the bench. The 2 starters are obviously Colin Sexton and Kevin Love, and off the bench is Alphonso McKinney and Larry Nance. And I'm gonna break character now. Good for Larry Nance. You could really tell, like, I'm not always the biggest fan of cameras constantly being in the faces of players who are grieving or people who are grieving in general. Like last night, I had a bit of a problem with how long that media scrum went for Carmelo. You could read the room and read the emotions from the video that he really didn't want to talk and he just wanted to go home and grieve. But you could tell that this was a tough moment for Larry for sure. Kobe was a player he obviously looked up to. Somebody he told me when I did one of my first stories on him, it was a Call of Duty sponsored thing of all things. He talked about how it's just surreal that he got to play in such a short span in his career with a player he looked up to in Kobe Bryant, and then also another player he looked up to and went to the NBA Finals with LeBron. And no, that just, he was, in my opinion, he just came with so much energy right out the gates, and he finished with 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, just all over the place. And, you know, that bench unit is starting to be fun again with everyone at full health. And I think, Larry Nance was the crux of the bench being so much fun tonight, but no, overall, it was just a super fun game, and we can get into the nitty-gritty and about it in a bit, but let me hear your thoughts about what you thought of the game.
Yeah, here's my thing. I agree on the bench unit. I thought KPJ was like the star of the night. I think the energy and just the vibe he brings is really, really important. You know, I think that I give the Cavs a lot of credit. I was tweeting about this, but I don't know like who to give credit for this, but that was a group that I don't think last year they would have like handled a game like this like they did tonight mentally. I'm not speaking to these guys and I can't speak to like know their DNA per se, but like I look at this and I don't think they would handle the emotion of this, the magnitude of this, and play with the energy and kind of lift that they did. That was a really impressive thing for me, for them to come out, snap with 7 game losing streak. They had not won since January 11th, a good 16 days ago when they were in Denver. That was the last winning streak as well, a 2-game winning streak. And also, I think the bench unit also is the thing that really pops for me. Sexton really popped too. We'll talk about him, I think, in KPJ in our next segment more than anything else. But I think that bench unit, and it looks like now the rotation is going to be this. Starting 5, Garland, Sexton, Osman, Love, Thompson. Second unit is going to be Porter Jr., Larry Nance Jr., John Henson, McKinney, and Exum. You know, you can, we'll see what the roster looks like post the trade deadline if guys get bought out. Like, it wouldn't shock me if John Henson gets bought out. It wouldn't shock me if Brandon Knight gets bought out or whatever. You know, the plan I know is to bring McKinney back for the year. You've talked to him, and that's what the Cavs have kind of signaled kind of off the record. But that bench unit, compared to where we were with playing Brandon Knight or playing smaller guys, like, it is a much longer, more athletic group. It plays with some pace. There's a defensive identity there. Like, you know, KPJ is not like a good defender yet, but like, he's better than you would think for what his track record was coming into the NBA.
Yeah.
And McKinney's solid. Nance is solid. Henson's, you know, solid. Exum plays with, you know, is solid. And they all these guys can play with pace and run the floor. I really, really like that bench unit. And it just felt like they took control of the game in a way that I just wasn't expecting, and really good job on them. Even though if you look at the box score, like, you know, Nance had 10, McKinney played out of his absolute mind with 15 in this one. And KBJ was good, but like, Exum just kind of contributes in little ways that don't like show up in more than 4 points in 16 minutes or whatever.
I mean, he was across the board. He contributed in every statistic, but like, no, he just, the whole bench unit just played with so much energy and fire tonight. Like, it just kind of kept the ball rolling. Sorry to steal your thunder.
You're all good. I think this was about as well as I could have hoped they would have played. I think that bench unit was a big deal. I thought playing in the first half the way they did was a big deal. We're not going to talk about him a ton because he kind of wasn't relevant after the first half, but Kevin Love like really mattered in that first half. You know, he makes the 5-3. He makes the 6-3. He's the only Cav to make a 3-pointer in the first half. Jetty was the second player to make one kind of midway through the third quarter. And you also just saw like when they sometimes I think one thing the Cavs, I like when they do it is when they run little post-ups for Love and just kind of let action come off of that. It creates looks on the back end for other people. It is creating just easy looks for guys in the corner. I think that's a really just good, smart thing to do when you need easy buckets. And you saw the Pistons really respected that, maybe to a fault, and the Cavs took advantage. And that just mattered. Like, that little stuff with Love kind of carrying them in the first half and then Sexton being great in the second and the bench unit being great really was like a very good way for the Cavs, I think, to just kind of win a game and just, again, just look like a team on the bench with Kevin dancing and them all just getting amped up about all of it. It was just, this was about as much fun as I've had all year observing a Cavs win and kind of watching them have fun with it.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think a good way to describe this game overall is it's a bit of a palate cleanser as well for the Cavs. They, as we noted many a times, they have not been a lot of fun to watch in general lately. And to be fair to Detroit, Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson are like two noteworthy players. Sekou Doumbouya has potential. Thon Maker isn't that great. I'm not going to even try and pronounce Svi's last name. So the guy who started the two for the Cavs and used to play for John Beilein, did he play for Beilein? I'm going to sound like an idiot. But no, he played at Kansas. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, Svi, yeah, he played at Kansas.
Yeah, I was confusing him with the rookie in New York that played for Beilein.
Oh, Ignas Brazikas.
There we go. And then, I mean, I didn't realize this until I'm now looking at the box score overall. Like, I knew Detroit was bad, but I didn't know they were four games better than Cleveland bad.
And they're like three. They came into this one three games out of the playoff picture,
which is absurdly.
Which tells you a lot about the bottom of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, for sure. Which also tells you maybe the Cavs will have a chance to make the playoffs.
Evan, but don't do this. Don't do this to any.
I'm just giving the kiss of death real quick so they can bottom out for the lottery. But it was I would agree. This is just a fun overall game to watch. Just like a little bit of just nice things across the board from everybody. And like you said, Kevin Love was kind of a non-factor. He was a non-factor in the second half, but I think he kind of got the snowball where he pushed it off the mountain and then helped it gain momentum, and then it was completely out of control by the time like KPJ kind of played with all that energy. And then you have McKinney, Exum, Nance, Henson, Sexton, and everybody else just playing was so great. And overall, just I'm very happy with how this game went. We'll see how tomorrow goes with Zion and the Pelicans in town. But hey, We were breaking down the schedule last night, and you said the Pistons game could have been winnable, and I thought this wasn't a winnable game, so I'm gladly happy to eat crow on this one.
Yeah, I'm an optimist, everyone. That's not true, but I'm apparently just a big time optimist, Chris Manning. That's going to be my brand for 2020. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to talk about KPJ and I think Sexton in particular, probably more KPJ. But on the way out here, you're going to hear one Larry Nance talking about Kobe texting him after game one of the 2018 finals. I would recommend going to Cavs.com, listening to the Love Scrum, listening to the Nance Scrum and the Tristan Scrum, largely about Kobe. They're really interesting, really insightful. Please go check those out. But here's just a little snippet of that audio courtesy of Cavs.com. But we'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs.
It was unbelievable. I mean, I didn't expect anything. You know, I mean, he had countless teammates in his career. He had met, shook hands with, and you know, bumped elbows with so many different people in the world, in the world of basketball, and in our league. And yeah, I didn't expect me to stick out or have any special impact on him. But you know, just the way he was, I remember the year I got traded and we went to the finals. We played game one, all that happened in game one, and it was a rough game, but, coming back, to the locker room, and, seeing a text from Kobe Bryant, like, stick with it, just one game, you got this. Come on. Yeah, he didn't have to do that. You know, I'm sure, whatever made him think of me is just what I'm so thankful for in those moments we played the biggest game of my life, my career, lost it. And, coming back to the locker room and seeing that text was like, it's all good and I'll be fine.
And we're back again. That was Larry Nance talking about Kobe. Evan, KPJ survives a scare, survives that ankle roll. I think Cavs Twitter collectively was like, I'm out. We're going to get off Twitter and not come back. We're going to walk into the woods and never come back. We're going to go buy a pack of cigarettes and never come back to our families.
It's got 16 really minutes. Deep all of a sudden.
I really pivoted hard from my optimism. but, 16 minutes, 9 points, 4 of 8 from the field, 3 steals. Played really with a lot of energy, comes back after that ankle injury that, frankly, when he went back to locker room, I was like, this is a wrap. Like, let's just pack this one up. But it was really good to see him back. And, I think he played well. I think he picked up sort of where he left off. This was all I could have hoped for in for him. I don't know if he's going to play tomorrow. We're recording this. I haven't paid attention to see if they've said anything about that. It wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't play on Tuesday, but, good to have KPJ back.
Yeah, no, I'm very happy to have KPJ back. I texted you, I think this morning, a screenshot from Action News Network. It just said he had like a 70% chance he was probable for tonight. And I said, it's something for us to talk about. And then he came out and looked obviously a little rusty. He had 10 games off, if I remember correctly. And the rust was definitely showing at first, but he was just trying to pick up where he left off. He played smart defensively. He was trying to move the ball and just be active off the bench and just kind of facilitate and get everybody else involved. And that ankle roll scared me for a little bit because I didn't catch the exact context of him rolling his ankle at first. I thought it was his knee was hurting him again. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's a problem, just shut it down. Let him rest. It's not worth him getting hurt long term, but thankfully, he came out and, like you said, was one of the gems off the bench coming into this game. And I just had a lot of fun watching him. And shout out to Ryan Morton, the guy who runs the Feel the Fear the Sword Twitter account, and on his own personal account. I think from there he tweeted that it's kind of hilarious that KPJ is arguably one of Cleveland's best perimeter defenders. And I think that's just something I still haven't expected from him based on all reports. And I'm sure for those of you who have listened to the Trevor Magnotti podcast we did last week, and if you haven't, frickin' listen to it already, why don't you? Trevor's big board comparison to KPJ coming into at around the draft, at least, was he's another Nick Young type player, and that throws up a red flag. But no, he just keeps squashing that notion with him, and Trevor may not be as high on him because I couldn't get him to join the hive with us, and says like he thinks he's going to be a very nice bench player at the peak of his, at the crux and peak of his career. But you know what? I'm totally happy with it, and I will firmly remain on the record that he has been Cleveland's best rookie this season, and just out of the two they have, and just like the most fun to watch, just because it's like watching a deer learn how to walk for the first time. It's a little awkward and a little clunky at first, but the more and more he or she gets used to it, speaking in deer, not Kevin, the more fun and like just awesome it is to watch unfold. And eventually he's so fully comfortable out there that like you're like, all right, the Cavs definitely got a steal trading 4 seconds and cash considerations for him to get the 30th overall pick. And hey, good revenge game because Detroit's the team that traded him. So
yeah, the Cavs gave a lot of money and got him, which is really quite worked out for them. I felt like for me the thing with him, I thought the defense was really solid. I thought most of his driving was really well. To me, my favorite play, end of the third quarter, it's late in the shot clock. That bench mob is out there. He passed it to Nance, and then if you watch the play back, you can see him pointing to McKinney because he couldn't make the pass. But he knew Nance could. He was like the intermediary to this. And he like McKinney ends up getting a wide open three and sticks it. Just like really good shit from Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah.
You have to be really happy with that recognition. I think his basketball IQ is much higher than I think it was sold on coming in. Again, really just good to have him back. I'll be curious to see what the plan is for him. I almost don't want to see him to play tomorrow. I'd rather him like get his rest, get a night off, get a chance to be fully healthy, and then kind of play. They play four times this week. Like he can play Saturday. He can play Thursday. Play Saturday. Both at home. Just give him tomorrow off. Play Delhi 6 minutes tomorrow, whatever, and figure it out. Play Tyler Cook or something. You know, it's not the fun option, but I would rather just not rush KPJ into too much for his running. I want to see how the ankle is. There's no reason to overdo it with him right now.
Exactly, I'd agree. I think they should give KPJ the night off, and then I think Kevin Love will likely get the night off as well, just because it's a back-to-back, and just to spare him against Zion as well. But I think I tweeted this earlier today. I think it would be really cool on the Cavs' part before we start. I'm just going to make a quick plea here. If someone in the Cavs coaching staff for some reason is listening to our podcast, let Larry Nance start and let him be the one who gets the ball in either the 24-second or 8-second violation if the Cavs do plan on doing that tomorrow. Because clearly you could tell like how much it meant for that video tribute for him to Kobe, and I think it would mean even more to him because it's somebody he genuinely looked up to and somebody who mentored him and everything, just to be a part of that tribute to someone who means so much to him. But Chris, how about Colin Sexton, man? I think he listens to the podcast and uses his haters as motivation.
Probably not. Colin strikes me as a guy who like listens to like a lot of like Young Thug and is just like hanging out. Young Slug, as the kids say.
There we go.
But look, 23 points, a game high, 10 to 19 from the field, 5 assists, 5 turnovers. But I just felt like he made some like reads that were really good. I think in particular that read where he got too deep into the lane. They ran that play where I love that play where he dives and Kevin feeds him the ball. I love that play design. And he like couldn't score, and then he feeds it to Thompson, who Tristan, also very good in this game, was three or four from the line. So all three were on 3-point plays on a 17-11, a pretty quiet 17-11 night. Like just really good shit overall. But Colin Sexton, you know, I think one of his more impressive games this season on first watch. You know, only doesn't make a three, but like was very aggressive getting to the hole. Also did a lot of the really little stuff. Like he had a point in this game where like he boxed out Andre Drummond and prevented Andre Drummond from getting into the lane. Like that's just good stuff. I'm largely pro, if slightly skeptical of Colin Sexton. This is a game that if you want to like believe in him, this is a pretty good game for you to feel good about him, especially because I felt like the decision making for him, it was like an effort for him. It was like noticeable that he was going to like making an effort to try and make the right passes in this one.
No, I totally agree, and I think you and I are both just on the same page where that assist he had to Thompson in the third quarter was just a really smart read, and I think I tweeted that, wow, what a beautiful pass by Sexton, and, like, I wasn't being sarcastic. Like, that was genuinely, like, just a surprising play because I'm not used to Colin seeing that. And I hope, and the old saying is, if ifs were fists, we'd all be drunk by now. But I hope going forward that if he is able to add a little bit of this wrinkle to his game, it's just going to make things a hell of a lot easier for him going forward. And he's not going to get openly roasted by people online, and people aren't going to be so critical of his game if he just adds just a little bit of a dynamic to move the ball. But yeah, no, he played with a lot of energy tonight, a lot of just hustle and determination, and it was really refreshing to see. And all things considered, like, this Kobe news has devastated the league across the board. I'm sure, as everyone knows at this point, the Lakers and Clippers are not playing tomorrow because of it, and rightfully so. The Lakers need to have as much, the organization as a whole needs to have as much time as they can to mourn the loss of Kobe. But the Cavs kind of just came out here locked in, and like, it didn't, like, obviously it's on their mind and on their hearts, but it feels like they used it as a bit of a fuel as well, if that makes sense, just to kind of play with like a little bit of extra energy and a little bit of extra hustle. And no, Colin was definitely one of those players, and I'm definitely pleased to see how good a night he had. And it's nice to be able to talk about Colin Sexton in a positive light instead of just being overall cynical grump about just saying like, well, he scored 20 points on 20 shots, and but he didn't move the ball at all. But no, he overall just had a nice, well-rounded game, and it was a good counterbalance to Darius Garland, who did not have the best night tonight.
Okay, so what we're going to do now, Evan, now that we've talked about this game again, the Cavs win by 15. Cavs play Zion tomorrow. They play the Pelicans tomorrow. You will be there. We're going to record a podcast in the arena after the game. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to turn this over for 1 second to my friend Zach, who's going to the game tomorrow. He's with me right here now. He's going to tell us, is he more excited about Zion seeing the Kobe stuff or the 90s Cavs head, and what else you're looking for in this game tomorrow? I'm putting you on the spot here.
So the hat was definitely, the first thing that really intrigued me about the game, because I had no idea if Zion was even going to be playing. I do think that the Kobe stuff is going to put me in like a mental state that will, you know, probably bring the tissues out. And I hate to say that, like, that's going to be like the best part of being able to go to that game is to be mourning Kobe Bryant. But I think it's going to be a very powerful moment. We've seen across, basketball stadiums. I mean, even at the Pro Bowl, they're shouting Kobe's name. The Grammys gave a shout out to Kobe too multiple times. I'm going with my friend who we have a very strong bond of Kobe. One of the only people that I really found that connected to him a lot. And I think it's going to be a really special moment, something that I will, remember for the rest of my life. And I think, the Kobe thing will definitely be when I walk away from the game tomorrow, I'll remember that the most.
Evan, what are you looking forward to at this one? What is your like big thing you're looking forward to take? I think this is just going to be a really weird, interesting game to be at. What are you looking forward to?
Well, Chris, as members of the media, we don't get the 5-panel hat because we didn't pay for the price of admission.
Look, I'm going to find one. I've got a hookup. So if you need one, I think I can get us both one.
Yeah, okay, cool. Because I wanted the fanny pack too back in November, because just to complete the over 90s ensemble, but it is what it is. But no, I think I agree. I think the Kobe tribute like is going to just be a somber moment. And one thing that I will always say when it comes to the Cavs is they do go above and beyond when it comes to presentation and just getting stuff
very good at this stuff.
Very, very good at this stuff. So I feel like it's going to be just like a special moment. It's going to be an emotional moment, and I don't know. It's just, I'm still processing it. My buddy, I'm sure people who follow me on Twitter or the few of you who follow me on Instagram know, like, I went to Milwaukee back in December to meet a friend that I met through Carter Rodriguez and Justin Rowan's Discord from their podcast. And we went to the Bucks game, and like, he messaged me at like 11 o'clock last night saying like, I can't sleep because this is just really bugging me. And like, it's just an overall bummer. And then like, there's other people I know who are Lakers fans. And like, you see all these tributes, like, I don't know if you've seen the pictures of downtown, Chris, but everything's purple and gold right now. And then if you go through Houston, all the bridge arches are illuminated in purple and gold. And then somebody I know who lives in Los Angeles said, like, on his drive home, like, every other billboard and every water tower and every building had some type of picture or tribute or monument to Kobe, and everything was in purple and gold. And I think, I don't know if the NBA, you can never put an actual timeline on how long it takes to properly mourn the loss of somebody. And like I said last night, I can't even imagine what Vanessa and Kobe's family and their kids are, and Kobe and Vanessa's kids are going through right now. But like, I want to personally thank them. I mean, I doubt they're going to listen to this podcast, but for sharing their husband and their father and their son with us for 20 years. And I think the Cavs are going to do something really nice for tomorrow. And it's just going to be overall just in a raw emotional moment. But I think everyone who is there in person will be able to say, like, I was there to commemorate a titan of the NBA.
Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
You summed it up better than I could. I think it's just going to be a really special game for a lot of reasons. A game I'm very excited to be back covering games. It's been a while since I've been there, just for a variety of reasons, but I'm very excited to get back in the arena.
Yeah.
And do that. It's a good game to go back to for reasons that are both really fun and obviously very going to be very sorrow. I think it'll be an interesting mood. I'm going to try to get it walk, do a lot of walking around and just kind of seeing, you know, if people are wearing Lakers jerseys and stuff. I'm really excited to see what the environment's like. Cavs are very, again, you're right, they're very good at this stuff, and I'm sure they have something planned. They've alluded to that a little bit, but it's going to be interesting. But as we get out of here on today's show, again, the next segment is myself and Jake Madison talking about, he was actually at the Pelicans game covering it on Sunday when this news kind of broke, and was there that day. So you get his perspective on what that was like, and then talking about what Zion has done and not done for this Pelicans team so far. So we'll have that, and then Evan and I are going to be back tomorrow recording from the arena, chatting in person, which will be really cool to do tomorrow. After
we haven't done in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen you since we teamed up, so this will be good. I'm excited to like see you, and you'll be like, why did I partner with this weirdo? But it'll be fun. It's gonna be a really, I think, a memorable night at the Cube. But again, the Cavs win this one 115-110. You're gonna hear John Beilein talking about the value of Kevin Porter Jr. on the way out of here, and I'll be back with Jake Madison after a short break.
You know, you just saw the things that he does for us that few other players can do. Just athletic plays where he gets a basket that others can't get. But we did see some rustiness too. But it's good. He's got to go through that, and every minute we'll try to put his minutes up a little bit. And then McKinney was great. I think he felt bad about the other night. He didn't have particularly one of his good nights. But he made some big threes when they would like make a shot and get it to 17, or it could have got to 15. He answered several times.
Joining me now from the wonderful city of New Orleans is Jake Madison, the host of Locked On Pelicans. You can find him on Twitter, I believe, at NolaJake. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's good to do a little Locked On crossover here. We're going to start with kind of a heavier topic. You were covering or about to cover a Pelicans game when the Kobe news broke yesterday, the news of his death. What for you, and what was it, how did the Pelicans themselves sort of react to this? And what was it just like being in an NBA arena, covering an NBA game on the day that something as seismic as that happened?
So that was an experience unlike I've ever had here in New Orleans or in any NBA arena. And it's kind of a stark contrast to the feeling that's been going on down here the past week or so with the return of Zion Williamson, where it's kind of felt like a party, a beat. And then that news broke, an hour or two before people really got to the arena yesterday. And so I drove down there, and immediately you step into the building and it just kind of felt life still, like the energy or the life force had been sucked out of the like building collectively. And then the first person I ran into once I was in the arena was Joel Myers, the Pelicans play-by-play for TV, who used to call Lakers games. And just kind of seeing him and how he was doing and someone so close to Kobe was kind of rough. And I'm from Los Angeles originally myself, lived there for 18 years growing up. So kind of, a huge Kobe fan. So it hit everybody. That's the best way to put it. I talked to every usher. I normally talk to the ticket reps, the people in the Pelicans front office, and everyone just looked like they wanted to be anywhere else other than dealing with basketball. And, I think everyone kind of had to scramble and figure out, like, what do we There was questions if the games were going to go on. That was uncertain. And then what sort of tributes were going to be done. And I think, you know, everything managed to come together and it ended up being a really nice evening in the Smoothie King Center. All of the Pelicans players switched into Kobe shoes to wear during like layup lines and warmups before tip off. They changed out of those to whatever shoes they have to wear contractually. There was the 20-second moment of silence in honor of Kobe Bryant. And then both teams ran out the shot clock for the first two possessions, and that just a ton of Kobe cheers, Kobe chants, whatever you have. But for the beginning part of the game, it didn't seem like those guys were into it. None of the players went through their normal warm-up routine. They chose to just stay in the locker room. Both PRs closed both locker rooms too, so we couldn't talk to the players. Alvin Gentry and Brad Stevens just spoke about Kobe. You know, there was a significant change in Zion Williamson's minutes, and we didn't know that going in because no one really talked about it. Just a weird night.
I think for everyone, it was like just covering it, like, and just thinking about this, it's weird. But that is just like a surreal thing. I mean, I think you know this. Everyone that follows the league closely sort of knows this. Like, Kobe is like this icon for a whole generation of players, a whole generation, and beloved. If you just look at like most every coach in the league that was talking about this, they were obviously very gutted and very emotional about this. Do you feel like for this Pelicans group, some of whom obviously came from the Lakers, I don't think overlapped with Kobe, but came from the franchise that he was with for two decades. Do you feel like there is that this is something that for that group is going to carry over into this next week or so?
You know, I'm not sure, you know, because everyone kind of deals with grief in their own way. And though all three of those guys, they did not play with Kobe, but I mean, he's still very much a presence around the Lakers organization. So they all knew him. Drew Holiday, you know, I idolized that guy growing up when he came into the league, being from Los Angeles and the Hollywood area in particular. So it's something that just kind of hit all of these guys in different ways. And even if they didn't know him personally, Every single player in the league right now idolized this dude. You can kind of pick his game to death if you wanted to and poke holes in it in terms of his on play. And I talked to someone who was like, I just never got the Kobe thing. I was never a Kobe guy. He's a sports reporter down here. And then he goes, and then I talked to players and every single one of them bring Kobe up. So it hits everyone. You know, they knew him personally or not, or whether they played with him or not. He is such a big influence on, again, probably every single person, maybe other than like Vince Carter in the NBA at this point, that it's going to be rough for everyone. And I'm sure you'll experience it, you know, when you're at the arena for this game coming up between the Cavs and Pelicans. So I don't know if it's going to carry over, if there's like a collective hangover or something like that. It's just kind of, you know, I think everyone's kind of taking it day by day.
That sounds about right. To transition to something a little more enjoyable, the Pelicans and the Zion Williamson show are coming to Cleveland on Tuesday night. Jake, what has the Zion Pelicans experience been like so far? What has he brought to that team?
So, more than anything, it's just been really fun, which is nice to see after having a 13-game losing streak early on in the year. He does a lot for this team. So they try and play primarily transition-based. If you're looking for like direct impact on the court, they want to get out and run in this Alvin Gentry type of system, and their half-court offense has not been particularly good. And then Zion come in and has been able to kind of change that basically right off the bat, significantly helping this team in half-court possessions in slower type of game. So I think that's been a real great thing. This is a guy who gets his shot blocked a little bit or can't finish at the rim and somehow keeps getting the offensive rebound. He had 7 offensive boards against the Boston Celtics and can kind of finish possessions that way. They might not be efficient possessions, but they're not empty possessions, so they're still a little bit better. But more on that, it's another threat you have to kind of pay attention to, and he's not the focal point of this team right now. That's still Brandon Ingram. But, you know, you saw it when they played the Spurs in his first game. Every time he touched the ball, the Spurs were double teaming him, and he's got some pretty good basketball IQ and can throw some zip on these passes. And if he makes the right read, all of a sudden it forces the defense into a rotation, potentially a long rotation, and the Pelicans will find an open shooter that way, or you'll get Brandon Ingram doing something around the basket. So he just really helps them out in the half court right now, which is an area they've struggled a whole lot recently.
How has he impacted guys like Brandon Ingram? It's early, so obviously these are not definitive data points or definitive takes or anything, but how has he impacted guys like Brandon Ingram and the other core guys like Jrue Holiday on this team since he's come back?
So Holiday's been okay. Ingram struggled since he's been out there on the court with Zion Williamson. And I think it's just one of those things. They're playing Zion in spurts right now. It's usually between 4 and 6 minutes that he's going to be out there at a time. And so while he's out there, you kind of want to make the most of those minutes, meaning they're getting him the ball maybe at the expense of Brandon Ingram. When I think everything's kind of all settled and the rotations are normal, that won't really be the case. So it's kind of seemingly taking Brandon Ingram out. He hasn't had good shooting nights. There have been times where you kind of just forget he's out there on the court. For a guy who's probably the leader for most improved player, that's a little bit alarming to me. But like you said, it hasn't been enough time to really kind of tell how it's going to go. And we haven't seen just kind of a regular game rotation from it. But his shooting's been off, and I think it's the lack of rhythm that he's been able to get in. I think they're maybe being a little too Zion-centric right now, but I understand why they're trying to do that and why they're trying to get him the ball in the high post and let him kind of create off of that, where that's kind of been Brandon Ingram's role. And so now he's kind of shifted a little bit. I think it'll get worked out, but the good news is there's enough talent on this team where you can still stay in some of these games or even beat teams like they did the Boston Celtics, despite kind of having a number of these hiccups right now that are kind of taking them out of rhythm.
For you, what is, for someone that has maybe not watched the Pelicans very much coming into Tuesday night's game, what is a non-Zion Brandon Ingram? Because I think the Brandon Ingram thing is pretty out there. What is just a part of this team, a player on this team, that you would say is just kind of worth paying attention to and kind of that is maybe not a main storyline for this group?
Yeah, it's Derek Favors without a doubt. He's been as important a player for this Pelicans team this year as anyone else. They are significantly better defensively when he's out there on the court, and they have not been good this year. But he does wonders in pick and roll defense and trying to take away sometimes both the roll man and the ball handler in that, making the right reads and providing some really important rebounding there. Jackson Hayes, the rookie who's done a very good job as a rookie for what was supposed to be a redshirt year, has not rebounded the ball particularly. The Pelicans have moments where they can get absolutely crushed on the offensive glass. The Denver Nuggets did this most recently. I think it was 20 offensive boards and like 35 second chance points. And that was because Derek Favors was in foul trouble and out of the game for the majority of it. So he's a guy that, like, if he's out there on the court, the Pelicans are significantly better. The starting lineup they've been using of Jrue Holiday, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Zion, and Derek Favors. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe their net rating has been incredible and very good so far this year. He's a real key guy for the team, and if you get him in foul trouble and keep him off the court, the Pelicans' chances of winning significantly drops.
Last thing here, Jake. Where is Zion at minutes-wise right now? He's just played a couple games. I think you mentioned before we started recording that there was a change Sunday, but like, is there an expectation on how many minutes he's really going to be playing right now?
Yeah, so it's going to be minimum 20 or so. That was kind of the opening number. I think he played 18 in that game. Then it increased to a little over 20 in the second game and then kind of exploded, I guess, if you want to say, to about 27, 28 against the Boston Celtics. It was the way they used him against Boston that was a bit of a different wrinkle, though. He's been coming out to start each quarter, the first, second, third, fourth, playing about 4 to 6 minutes in there and kind of hitting that not artificial minutes cap that they have out there for him, because he's not technically on a minutes restriction, but if they see him getting tired, they just pull him. And it's the choice of the medical staff. So in the fourth quarter against the Celtics, in the first two games, they were close games that the Pelicans could have won, but you didn't have Zion out there to close in the final five, and that probably hurts your chances of winning. And so in the game against the Celtics, you saw Alvin Gentry start him for the fourth quarter, play him about 4 minutes there, and then subbed him back in with about 6 minutes remaining and let him finish out the quarter and kind of gave him a break in there to, I guess, catch his legs back underneath him. But they hadn't done that yet. So seeing him close the game was kind of interesting, and I expect that to be the norm going forward.
You can find Jake on Twitter at NolaJake. Check out the Locked On Pelicans podcast, just like you check out Locked On Cavs for all things Pelicans. Jake, thanks so much for coming on.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, man.